Hey guys, it's Chris and Carly. We're back with our next episode in our Enneagram series, Enneagram and Teenagers. We said back in our last few episodes, we just had a ball with this one. This is a blast to be able to really sit down with real experts in the field and talk about the Enneagram and how it pertains to teenagers. And today's first part of a two-parter with Beth McCord. Beth is an Enneagram coach and expert based out of Nashville. And so we'll tell you up front that the audio from this particular interview sounds a little bit different because it's done over computer because we don't live in the same cities and plane tickets are expensive. So
exactly.
So it'll sound a little bit different than our typical recordings, but definitely comes through clear. And Carly, if you tell us a little bit about, what do we talk about the first part of this interview?
So I actually first heard Beth McCord on another podcast with Annie Downs. Mm-hmm. I had just started reading about the Enneagram and listened to her episode and was like, wow, I feel like she really explained each of the types really well. And so that's what we asked her to do, especially we get into most of that in this episode and we'll have to finish up some of it in the next one. But really, she takes us through the nine types. She talks about core fear, core desire, weakness, what each number longs to hear. And so if you don't know the Enneagram, if you're trying to figure out your number, or if you know your number, this is a great one to listen to, to really start to know more about each type so that you can figure out what your number is, or to listen to it with a teenager and have just start conversations. So this one, she's going to introduce her background and then go through numbers 1 through 6.
Mm-hmm. Beth has a fantastic Enneagram page, Instagram.
There you go.
Yeah, Instagram page on the Enneagram where she does coaching. She does a lot of information on each one of the types. It's my Enneagram coach. Is that right?
It's your Enneagram coach.
Your Enneagram coach. So not mine. Your Enneagram.
Yours. Don't be so selfish.
I know. I'm going to take it for myself. So anyway, that's a great resource as well where she does a lot of interaction with people, answers lots of questions on there as well. So definitely check that out. So without further ado, let's jump into our interview with Beth McCord.
Hey everyone, so today we are here with Beth McCord, who is our Enneagram expert, and we're so excited to have her share her wisdom as well. And Beth, before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about your expertise and what you actually do?
Yeah, so I am your Enneagram coach, that's my business, and so what I've been doing for the last 15 years is really studying and getting to know the Enneagram on a deeper level. But then the most important part is to help others to understand how to use it in their own personal growth and in their own relationships. So at Your Enneagram Coach, we're helping people to stop having self-condemnation, fear, and shame by experiencing and knowing that they have unconditional love, forgiveness, and freedom in Christ. And how we do that is through using the Enneagram. And the Enneagram is illuminating why we do what we do, like what is going on deep inside us. And so because we know that God cares about our heart and the motivations of our heart, the Enneagram is, like I said, illuminating the motivations. And then the Enneagram is not fixing us. It's just giving us that path, the light of what's going on. It's the gospel that is going to free us in becoming who we are in Christ. So I use the Enneagram to help people grow and to become the best versions of themselves.
Awesome. So thank you so much for the work that you do. And we'll have that link in our podcast page so people can find you, Beth.
Yeah.
Let's start and dig into the types, the nine types, briefly. I'm going to try not to interject too much with questions because we are big fans of the Enneagram as well. Yeah. But why don't you tell us some things about each of the nine types?
Yeah, I'd love to. So the nine types, again, we're going to be focusing in on why you do what you do. I know most of us are really familiar with what we do, like what is our preferences, what are our likes? What are our characteristics? That is not what the Enneagram is about. So when you're going to focus in on which one of these is your type, you're wanting to get down to the very core motivations. And what those are the core fear. So this is the thing you're always running away from. Like, even if like, you're like, oh no, it's okay. When it comes up, your personality is going to try to hightail it out of there in some way, shape, or form. And then we have a core desire that we're constantly striving for and hoping that we can attain. If we have it, oh man, life is just perfect. But then we have a core weakness. And this is like, you know, the thorn in our side, like Paul would describe or an Achilles heel, where it constantly trips us up in life. And we might try so hard to get rid of it, like Paul asking the Lord. But it's also not that the Lord doesn't help us. We can grow in it, but it's always going to be there, reminding us of our need for Christ, reminding us of our need for God to be our strength, to be our help. So, and then the last one is our core longing. And this is like the message or the thirst we have that we kind of want from others, like our parents or teachers, coaches, friends, spouses, but they just can't ever give it to us the way we really long for. And then we get upset and we get hurt. Like, why aren't you giving this to me? Now, we're not thinking about that logically because it just comes so naturally, but it is the thing that we really long for. But the great news is it is the message that Christ came to answer for each of us. And so all that we've ever really wanted and needed, we actually have. We just sometimes don't realize it because we're not feeling it, we're not seeing it, we're not experiencing it. But when we know that the truth is real, right? And we will then know that the truth will set us free. Mm-hmm. So all that to be said, those are the core kind of motivations. Now there's so many other things we could talk about each of the types and get to know the types. But these are going to get to the heart of why each type does what they do. So now I'll say the names, but we usually refer to the types as their numbers because numbers are neutral. You know, they're neither good nor bad. Type one is not better than a type nine or vice versa. But the names, we use a two-name descriptor that my teacher, Catherine Favre, came up with, and they're excellent because they really capture kind of the essence of the type. But again, when we talk about it from here on out, we'll just be using the numbers. So, you ready?
We're ready.
Okay. All right. So the type ones are the moral perfectionist, and their core fear, what they're really running away from, is being wrong, bad, evil, inappropriate, corruptible, and being unredeemable. Now, what they desire is to have integrity, to be right, to be virtuous, to be balanced, to basically be the good boy or the good girl. So for them, it is all about ethics and morals and principles, doing things right. Now, how you're going to get to know the type one a little bit deeper is this core weakness. And the core weakness for the one is resentment. And where resentment shows up for them is, and how you can understand ones is they have a loud inner critic. And we all have an inner critic, but theirs has a megaphone and it is constantly blaring at them and berating them on what is right and what's wrong. And they really are trying their best to do what's right so that this inner critic will calm down and not be so loud and berating. Now, part of the resentment comes in is because they'll walk into a room and all the imperfections will leap out at them and assault them. And they think this happens with everyone else. And so why isn't anyone else picking up this piece of paper or putting this back right or doing this? Like, don't they see it as well? Well, no, not everyone sees it or experiences it the same way as the ones do. So the ones, since they feel like everyone does, they get resentful. Like, why am I the only adult, the mature one that has to do all these things and no one else is going to come through for them? So you can see that that would feel like other people are unloving to them. But we all see the world in different perspectives. So that's the beautiful thing about the Enneagram is that we have nine different lenses, nine different views of the world. So the ones need to recognize that not everyone sees the imperfections like they do. They don't leap out at them. In fact, I was at a restaurant recently with a type one and we went to the ladies' room, of course, like we all do, right? Us women. And on the wall was this huge, I mean, it was probably 6 by 4 feet cork board, but it was like corks from wines that were intermittently put together. So it was massive. I mean, you know, hundreds of corks. Well, I just took it all in and we were both like, wow. And immediately she saw in the right-hand corner down at the bottom where it's really dark. I mean, the lighting was dark in there where there was one that was missing. And I was just like, oh my gosh, how did you see that? Because this thing is huge and we were just passing it and we just laughed at how that is so true of the one. She wasn't trying to look for it. It just leaped out at her. And so we can understand ones better by understanding how loud and berating that inner critic is and how the weight that they carry with it and how hard that is. And what they desire, so their core, what their longing is, the message that their heart longs to hear is you are good. They just want to know, they're striving so hard to know, like, I'm doing the right thing, but they never feel like that message lands on them perfectly well. And it can't on this side of heaven, except for knowing that who we are in Christ, that his righteousness is now our righteousness. Because he is perfect, we are perfect. Not because we did anything, but because he put his righteousness on us. And that frees the one to go and like take a big deep breath and go, oh, okay, it's not up to me to perfect the world. And so that's the message we want to give our teens or anyone else that's a one. Go ahead.
I'm married to a one, and it's fascinating to me the things that she's able to see that I would never, ever notice. You know, I mean,
right.
And she'll beat herself up about it sometimes. I'll tease her about it sometimes. I'm a nine. And right. So, whoa, I mean, I know we're getting to the nine, but it's like, it's,
yes, it's
a totally different way of thinking.
Right. And I think that, you know, it is, and we'll kind of get into this, I think at some point, but you know, I love what you said. We kind of like laugh about it. And that's a great, great place to be, is in the middle of seriousness. And then like, so we tell people, don't use it as a sword, the Enneagram. So don't like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're this person, or I can't believe you're doing this, or can't believe. And you don't, cause that's so, it's a very exposing typology.
Right.
So we don't want to hurt people with it, but we also don't want to go, well, that's just who I am. You're just going to have to live with it. So you don't want to use it as a shield as well either. But because we are safe in the gospel, but because Christ did all the accomplishments and achievements on our behalf, we are free and we are forgiven. And so what that means is we can have more of a sense of humor and laughter about it in a loving way. Just like you said, like sometimes we can just laugh about it. Like I'm a nine too. So we can go, oh my gosh, I just did that. That's such a nine thing, and laugh. Now, if someone else is feeling sensitive, obviously that would be like being using it as a sword, us laughing at them, but
in our relationship.
Right. But if we can use it in a time together where we're both kind of like, oh, that's interesting, we just did that, then it can bring a sense of a lightness and a perspective, like, you know what, this is funny that I do these things, and thankfully I'm okay still in Christ. You know, like, I am no longer under the condemnation and the fear. I am his beloved. So I liked how you kind of worded that. That's great. Okay, so type two are our supportive advisors. And they fear being worthless, needy, inconsequential, dispensable, unworthy of being loved, and being rejected. Twos, what they're desiring is to be loved and wanted. Now, a lot of us are like, well, I want that too. But this is more from appreciation and gratitude. So twos are constantly wanting to serve, help, guide, advise, do something for others in some way to hear appreciation and thankfulness from others. And so what their core weakness is pride. And pride, there's a couple things that happen here. Is one, they have an unwillingness or an inability to acknowledge their own needs and suffering. And what they do is they're focusing on the needs and the suffering of others instead. And so they will walk into a room and they feel other people's emotions. And they instantly know who has the greatest need in the room and what that need is. It's really remarkable. And so that does give them a sense of pride and a sense of confidence, because they know, and they want to insert themselves in a helpful way to help that person, hoping they'll get appreciation and gratitude and thankfulness, because that translates to them as they're wanted and loved. So what we want them to realize is that the core longing that they want is you are wanted and loved for just being you. You don't have to serve and help and do all these things. Your love for just being you. And that is the message that Christ came to offer us. He literally came to say, I want you in relationship with me. I love you. So when the twos can rest in that message, they're then not going to strive for people to give it to us, because they can only give such a little bit amount. It's not going to satisfy. Any thoughts on the twos? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm a two in all of that. I totally resonate with. Me and my husband laugh all the time that I'm really good about giving hints, but really bad about telling him exactly what I need or what I want.
Yes. And that's part of the design of the two is, twos really master knowing what others need and want.
Right.
And picking up on clues and cues and then just delivering at the most random, surprising moments for people. And people love it. But they're like, why don't they do that for me? Well, people just don't have that same superpower. And so it's kind of like, I'm sorry, I didn't know that you liked that. And you're probably thinking, what do you mean? Like, I watch that or I do that all the time, but people just don't operate in that same connecting way as a two. So it can be very hurtful for a two when others don't come through for them in the same way. But here's the thing. We are all quote unquote loving others the way we want to be loved. Right. But then people don't give it to us in the way we want it. And so then we get hurt and frustrated and feel lonely or whatever it is. But that's why this is important to know how all nine types operate so that we can go, oh, my spouse is this number. I see that they're actually loving me from their vantage point. Oh, that's so sweet that they did that. That means that they really love me, even right. if it doesn't land on us the way that we really hoped, you know, for something. Now, that doesn't mean we can't let them know, hey, actually, what would be loving for me is if you did it this way. Because, you know, we don't know. Like, you know, like for you to let your husband know, actually, what I would really love, and I've told twos, like give a list of things that would really mean a lot to you, to your spouse and or your kid or whoever it is, and then you won't know when they're going to do it, and then they can surprise you with one of those 10, 20 things that you've put on the list at some time down the future, and it will still mean a lot because they've taken the time and the thought to do it, but at least they landed on something that you wanted. Does that make sense?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's, so twos, the difference between twos, and we'll get to nines later. Twos are, again, they have this pride and confidence that they know what others need and they move into their life and assert and insert themselves. Nines are like, no, unless someone asks me, I'm just going to stay over here in the background and I'll accommodate, but I'm not going to insert myself. So if anyone's out there going, well, I like to help too. Well, nines like to help. But it's more of an edit of accommodation, but we'll get into that when we get to the nines. Threes are our successful achievers and they fear being incompetent, failing, inefficient, exposed, worthless, and not appearing successful in some way, shape, or form. So it's a lot about image. What are other people seeing about them? And they desire to be valued, admired, respected, and held in high regard. Now, their core weakness is deceit. Now, deceit here means that they deceive themselves first and foremost, that they are only the image that they present to others. So they always have to present a successful, achieving persona with whatever group they're with. So they'll shapeshift because the image is what's important. They believe that if others see them as valuable, they are valuable. If others see them as not valuable, then they're not. And so if you think about, like, my husband was a place kicker, and there's a saying that says, you're as good as your last kick. Well, for them, it's you're as good as your last success. And so they're constantly having to strive for that next successful image so that someone will be happy and love them for the achievements. But what they really long for is for people to say, you are loved and valued for just being you. You don't have to achieve my love. And that would mean so much for the three, but they don't even think that's real. It's like, how is that possible? So they're the ones that have checklists and goals and are always on the move for the next achievement. But if they realize that Christ already came and achieved everything they need to obtain pure love, being just themselves, it can give them a great sense of rest and reprieve. Now that doesn't mean we all stop being our types. We want to be the healthiest version of our type. So we want the threes to keep achieving, but from a place inside of them that is restful, that they're just being this beautiful person versus striving to be loved and wanted for an image. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Great. Is it easy when you first meet? Because I feel like when I first meet someone, I'll think that they're a one or a three.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just on first impression, without really knowing a whole lot, that, like, those are the two numbers I go to that, you know, that seem to be very similar just on a Does that make sense?
Yeah. I used to, I think, feel very similar, like, oh, they appear this way, they appear that way. But the more I get into Enneagram and the complexities and the different layers and subtypes, I realize, actually, I really don't know why you do what you do. I have to ask a lot of questions. Wow. So I've really, the more I get into it, the more I don't even, I just walk around the world like everyone's just a person. I used to want to type everyone, you know, and try to figure it out. And I just realized that just doesn't do them any good. And then I will a lot of times mistype people just in my own mind because of their appearance, but I don't know their motivation. So an example is there's a subtype of type threes that looks very one-ish. Mm-hmm. And so I could think they're a one, but until I ask them why they do what they do, is it more about the image or is it more about the ethics? Then I won't know. So it's really good for us to kind of hold it very loosely. Now it does, I mean, we're humans, we're going to naturally kind of wonder and suspect, but just to constantly go, I won't know until that person names themselves.
Because that's good to know, because I know some ones that I know that aren't sure, or sure, not sure if they really are, or that they're more of a three, you know, like a high achieving.
Yes. One. Yeah. So it's, so no. the big difference between the ones and the threes is going to be the ones are following the inner critic. So they're basically going to be like, I don't care what you think, I'm going to do what's right. Mm-hmm. The three is like, no, I care what you think. I care about my image, but they still want to do what's morally and ethically right for this one subtype. And so it's still about the image, less about following the exact rules for the inner critic. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's very helpful.
Yeah. And that's why it's really good for us to go, I wonder if it could be these types. I'll need to wait and kind of let them assess that. But So the type fours are a romantic individualist, and they fear being inadequate, emotionally cut off. So like someone saying, don't have your emotions, or them unable to express their emotions, being plain, mundane, defective, flawed, and definitely not having a certain image or significance. And what they really desire is to have a unique, special, and authentic self. So they are always searching and striving for who they are and expressing that in some form or fashion. Now, where you're going to really get to know the fours is this core weakness of envy. And envy for them is the feeling that something fundamentally is missing in them that others possess. And so they really long for this missing piece, this defective piece, this tragically flawed piece. And they feel like they are not understood, and they look around at everyone else and they're like, everyone else has like what I need. And so they envy what others have because of this. And so the core longing is that they desire to be seen and loved for exactly who they are, special and unique. And that's exactly what Christ, I mean, literally Christ created you special and unique, and he loves you for how he created you. So again, the message is always answered by Christ fully and perfectly. And so that's who we go to be filled up with what we need versus trying to do it in our own way or making other people come through for us. Any thoughts on fours?
Fours are so interesting to me because I know a few fours and they look so different. They're both four, but they, and I know that gets into wings and all that stuff that we don't have to talk about. But one of my best friends, her and her sister are four, and they could not be more opposite, but yet their motivations are the same. And that's just so interesting to me and how that works with the Enneagram.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, there's some fours, that are going to be very expressive outwardly, meaning even their dress, their appearance, they want to be unique and different. And then there's some fours, they don't want to be that unique outwardly. But they will show their uniqueness maybe in their aesthetics or maybe their career choice. We had a pastor as a type four in his sermons. He would say was his work of art in the sense of expressing his true authentic self in the way he would format his sermons. When I write, when I present to people, I mean, it is a part of who I am, but I don't think of it in that way. I'm actually thinking more practically and as a nine, like simplicity and practically. So I loved hearing from him. Like he's really trying to offer others his unique self, his unique stamp. And so whether that's, you know, legitimately art, music, sermons, you know, cooking, I mean, whatever it is, they're going to want to share with you their unique self. And here's why. Because they feel this defective and flawed part, why would someone love them if they're defective and flawed? Okay. So I have to present this unique part of me, this special part of me, to overcome the defectiveness. And if someone can see the special, unique part of me, then hopefully they'll love me. Does that make sense? And so that's why this uniqueness is such an important piece for them. Okay, so type fives is the investigative thinker, and they fear annihilation, being ignorant, invaded, incapable, not existing, catastrophic depletion of their internal resources, and obligations placed on them. Now, their core desire is to be capable and competent. Now, where you're going to really get to know them is the core weakness, which is avarice. Now, avarice can usually mean greedy with money, but this is really that they feel that they lack the inner resources that I was talking about, and that too much interactions with others will lead to catastrophic depletion. This then leads them to withhold themselves from contact with others, and it also makes them hold on to their resources, internal resources, and minimize their needs. So they feel like their needs are a huge burden for others, so they want to minimize that and take care of it themselves. So the fives you can think of as, like, let's say a cell phone battery that only charges at the most to 20% a day. You know how we all have phones at some point or another that get like that. And you have to be very mindful of where are you going to be all day? How much are you going to need to use it? Do you somehow need to plug in the middle of the day? Cause you know that there's going to be some meetings in the day that you have to use a lot. So fives are constantly navigating and strategizing their inner resources to make sure that they have enough internal reservoir or resources. And what happens is people don't get this, especially the extroverts of the world and the people of the world. They just will barge in and, hey, we need this or that. And all of that depletes the fives immediately. And, you know, then people think, well, you're not very sociable. You're not a very people person. And that's actually not necessarily true. Fives can be very people oriented, but if you only have so much internal resources, you have to have stronger boundaries and need more time alone. So that's how you can get to know the fives. Now, their core longing is your needs are not a problem. So remember, they feel like their needs are insurmountable, a huge burden for others. Well, and some others may come across like it is, but Christ can do all things and can provide for all of our needs, and he does. And so if we realize that our needs are this tiny little something for him because he's the God of the universe, wow, what better place for them to go to ask for their needs to be met?
This is my husband, and that's all just spot on. He's a people person if it's his choice, but if you spring something on him, man, game over.
Right. I had a type six wife, so I know you're a type two, and her type five husband would come home from work, and her being also a very people person as well, would be like, hey, we're going to go out with the Smiths tonight. And he's like, uh-uh. Like, you cannot just spring. And you know, it becomes a big, you know, issue because, like, well, we can't just not, you know, and so, but giving heads up, even like, you know, in the office space for my husband who works with fives, for him to say, hey, I want to come talk to you for a second, I'll be down there in 5 or 10 minutes, is much better than just showing up at their door. Mm-hmm. It gives them time to plan and prepare what's going to happen. So it's just, again, it's an understanding of their perspective of life, their resources, being honoring and compassionate to them.
Right.
Great. Okay. So type sixes are our loyal guardians, and they fear fear itself, being without support, guidance, and security. They fear being alone, blamed, targeted, and physically abandoned. Now, they desire security, guidance, and support. And where you're going to get to know the sixes is the core weakness, which is anxiety. Now, this is basically a constant stream of scanning and preparing for worst case scenarios or predicting, planning what could happen. And it's not always doom and gloom. It's making sure that those things don't happen so better things do happen. But their minds do gravitate towards, well, what if? Could this happen? You know, did I plan for this? But what about that? So the difference between them and like the type ones, we talked about one loud inner critic. The sixes have an inner committee and they're chiming in from all vantage points, which they feel like kind of like the little green clay Gumby guy, you know, being pulled in all directions. And so it gets really confusing for them. Like, well, which one do I listen to? Which one's going to be right? And so they feel confused and uncertain and have self-doubt. So they then look outside themselves for guidance, security, and support, whether it is people like mentors and bosses they trust, a belief system, a textbook, you name it. They're looking for clarification so that they can make the right choice instead of being pulled in all these different directions. So their core longing is that they would be safe. So someone saying you are safe. But guess what? We are the most safe when we are right there with our good shepherd. He is the one that will ultimately protect us. So those are our type sixes. Any thoughts on those?
I know a lot of sixes for sure. It seems like there's a lot of nines and sixes in my life. And mm-hmm. I know sometimes as a nine, I don't always know how to relate to a six and yeah. how to best support. And I know that this stuff is very helpful with that.
Yeah. And it is, I'm married to a six. My son's a six and my mom's a six. I'm surrounded by sixes. And as a nine, I want to go, everything's going to be okay. You know, don't worry about it. And they're like, you're not living in reality, you know? Yeah. And so yes, we want to be there to reassure them, but that we definitely to couch it as like, oh, everything's going to be fine. That doesn't validate the potential real concerns that are out there. Mm-hmm. Now that doesn't mean I don't say, hey, I hear your concerns, but I do think it's going to be okay, or we're going to be okay. That can be very, affirming and reassuring to them that we heard them. And so if we just recognize that they have this inner committee and have compassion, that it does put them in analysis paralysis where they get frozen and stuck. But we want the sixes to realize that the Holy Spirit, when the Spirit is speaking to us, He gives us clarity, assurance, peace. And so the inner committee is creating all the chaos around us. And so we want to find that peace and that assurance inside us. And that's when we want them to move forward in the decisions that they make. And sixes actually, it sounds as if they're like this fearful type. And actually they're the most courageous on the Enneagram because they're always walking around with this what if. And they're constantly moving forward with courage in life and doing the next thing. So we just need to realize that sixes are actually very courageous. If we all had to deal with all of those anxieties all the time, yeah, it would be really hard. So we always just want to give a lot of kudos to sixes on how much they do get like bravely go into the world.
Carly Duke, and just wanted to check in at the end of Beth's interview and remind you that this was just part one. So if you're like, wait, I'm a seven and you didn't talk about me, we are going to get to you. Don't worry. The next episode will cover the rest of the numbers on the Enneagram. And then we're also going to get into some great questions that center around teenagers in the Enneagram and how they can find it. What are some challenges? And then you as an adult, how will the Enneagram help you help teenagers better? And so this is a conversation that you won't want to miss from Beth, but also we're going to have any resources that she mentions, her website, her Instagram account, which Chris kind of misspoke at the beginning, but is Your Enneagram Coach on Instagram. All of that will be on our website, www.teenlifepodcast.com. So you can find all of that there. And then don't forget to rate and review this podcast wherever you're listening. And we would really appreciate that. So come back next time and listen to the second half of our Beth McCord interview.